I'm Carson Horn, and it's Monday at 10, which means it's time for Talking Tumors on Weagle 91.1. So grab your toilet paper and let's get rolling. Things may be winding down academically here on the plains, but that is not the case in the world of collegiate athletics. There is still plenty going on here in around Auburn and across college sports as a whole. We've got plenty to dive into. Yes, it is our second to last show of the semester. Crazy to think. It always flies by here. Of Talking Tumors, I'm Carson Horn. Thank you for listening, whether you're listening live or listening on podcast. I really appreciate it. I thank you for sticking with me if you have all throughout these coming up on our second, finishing up our second year of this show over these next 2 weeks. But hey, we are not done yet. We're going to dive into the latest happenings for Auburn basketball. There's a lot of news that happened last week. We'll get into all of that. We're going to talk about what was another disappointing week for Auburn baseball. But we're going to start out today's show talking about Auburn football and looking, taking a way too early look, if you will, at the 2024 season. Because I thought, look, it's never too early. I know everyone's excited at this point after A-Day to start looking ahead to the season. What's the schedule going to look like? How many games can this team win? Well, the transfer portal opens tomorrow. So we're going to have news. News probably has broken by the time you're listening to this. As you're listening on podcasts, I'm checking my phone constantly to see the latest news. Who's entering the portal from Auburn? Who is Auburn going to be trying to get in the portal? That's all going to be going down over these next couple of weeks. The transfer portal is open for the next 2 weeks starting tomorrow. So the roster is going to change. So that's why this is a way too early look, because the outlook on the season could change astronomically after this portal window opens and closes, depending on who Auburn loses and who Auburn adds. I have no clue what's going to happen. I would expect some guys to leave. There could be a guy or two that you don't want to leave that does. It is talented. That's just part of it. But I do imagine Auburn is going to bring in some really good players as well. So we'll talk more about that on next week's show. But for now, let's look at this 2024 schedule for Auburn and talk about some of the key games, some of the things that stand out to me when I take a first look. This is not a prediction. I'll do that next fall before the season begins. This is just looking at some key games and things that stand out. So a couple of notes to remember before I get into this. Remember, next year the 12-team playoff starts. Personally, I'm not a fan of the 12-team playoff. I'm in the minority there. I'm not going to go into why that is on today's show, but we can debate that at another time. Nonetheless, as if you're an Auburn fan, I think this benefits Auburn in a big way. So you may think, well, that's weird then. Why are you against it? I just don't think it's great for college football, but I do think it will benefit Auburn. So that's an important note. There are also two bye weeks because of the 12-team playoff, added in two bye weeks this upcoming season. So that's also an important note as well. Just like 2 years ago, my freshman year here at Auburn, Auburn's first five games of the year are at home. I do not like this at all. I don't think it's beneficial for Auburn as a team. I really don't like it because it's exhausting going to a home game 5 weeks in a row, because it is just for students anyways, and even for fans in general, it's an all-day thing. And so it requires a lot of effort. It requires a lot of energy for a student. You got to get in line early. Then you get into the stadium 2.5 hours before kickoff. And then the game's 3 hours. You're in the stadium upwards of 6 hours. It is long, and it is exhausting, and it's going to be hot, no doubt, on August 31st for the opener against Alabama A&M. There are benefits, don't get me wrong, to the five-game schedule, because you get five straight at home. That's a chance to really start hot. Auburn didn't take advantage of this in the Brian Harsin era. I believe they went 3-2 in my freshman year in those first five games. But Auburn will start out against Alabama A&M in your cupcake game to start out the season. Then they'll welcome Cal into Auburn in week two before playing New Mexico, not New Mexico State, New Mexico. So, so staying with a team in the state of New Mexico, but not New Mexico State, who defeated Auburn last season. Then Arkansas and Oklahoma. Auburn's going to face Oklahoma. They will not face Texas, but they will face off against Oklahoma. I believe that's Oklahoma's first road SEC game as well. So those are the first five games. Immediately, what stands out to you when you look at those first five games? For me, I think Auburn needs to win four out of those five games. I think Alabama, A&M, Cal, and New Mexico should be wins. You should start out 3-0, barring any unforeseen upsets. Again, I haven't taken a deep dive into anyone else's roster, so I have no clue what Cal's roster will look like or anything like that next season yet. But I think just looking at it from a big perspective here, I think Auburn needs to win those three games. And then Arkansas and Oklahoma. Not a lot of people are high on Arkansas next season. It's kind of a make-or-break season for Sam Pittman. We'll see what they look like. Auburn should probably win that game, I would expect. And then Oklahoma. Oklahoma's the game I'm keying in on here, because I believe this Oklahoma game is a swing game for both Auburn and Oklahoma. This, if you look at over-under, at least on FanDuel, I know this is not a gambling show or anything like that, but for a lot of people do out there, and if you look at that, both Oklahoma and Auburn have an over-under of 7.5 wins. So I think that Vegas would agree on this. They also believe that this game's a swing game for both teams. If Oklahoma can get that win in their first SEC road game, that would be huge for them and their season. For Auburn and Hugh Freeze in year two, you get that Oklahoma win, maybe that gets you to a 5-0 start if you won the other four games. Or as you drop that game to Arkansas or Cal, you get that win against Oklahoma, okay, that gets you back on the right path. If Auburn can start out these first five games in a 4-1 or 5-0, they're going to set themselves up to really make a good push at an 8-win, 9-win season. If you go 5-0, you've set yourself up really nicely to really make a run at a 9-win season. So I think those first five games, because they're five straight at home, are extremely crucial for Auburn next season. After that, you've got to go three straight on the road, and it's not going to be easy. I could very, very easily see Auburn going 0-3 in this stretch, and you hope that doesn't happen, but it starts out with the game at Georgia. Of course, that is going to be a tough one in Athens, as always. Auburn let that game slip away, many believe, last year at home against Georgia. They'll get another shot, but of course, you know it's going to be much, much tougher when you're talking about going into Athens on the road at Georgia. So that's going to be a big game. Auburn does have a bye week, their first bye week in between at Georgia and then going to Missouri. But then Auburn goes to Missouri. Missouri had a really good year last year against under Eli Drinkwitz in his third season there. I expect them to be a good team again this next season. So I think that Auburn fans have to remove typical, we should be better than Missouri, kind of out of their mind. Missouri's going to be a good team, I fully expect, next season. So that game's going to be tough, I'd imagine, for Auburn. And then you finish out the three-game road stand at Kentucky. Don't know much about Kentucky. They've had some more staff turnover there. They brought in Brock Vandegrift from Georgia to be their quarterback. Who knows how they'll look, but that could be a tough game in Lexington. In an ideal world, Auburn wins two out of three there. Looking at it right now, you're probably hoping for one out of three is probably realistic. But you give yourself some wiggle room if you're able to start out hot in those first five home games. Then you go the three road games. And then you return back home after that for a pretty decent stretch. Auburn will host Vanderbilt, then have their second bye week, then play Louisiana Monroe and Texas A&M in back-to-back home games there before the Iron Bowl. Vanderbilt, who knows what they'll be. Is an important thing to note, Jerry Keel, the former New Mexico State head coach who came in and beat Hugh Freeze, has now been added as an assistant at Vanderbilt, so maybe a little nerves before that game, but Auburn should win that one. And then, of course, you've got the cupcake game against Louisiana Monroe after your second bye week. And then home against A&M. And that's going to be a tough game. Mike Elko will be in his first year under Texas A&M, but that is another kind of, in my mind, a toss-up game against Texas A&M. And then you finish out the season in Tuscaloosa against Alabama in the Iron Bowl. First game under Kalen DeBoer. Iron Bowl for Kalen DeBoer. That's obviously going to be the big story there. Funny that it'd be the first Iron Bowl well, without Nick Saban, of course, COVID year, Steve Sarkisian coached it, if you remember that. But Hugh Freeze will be the veteran coach in the Iron Bowl, which is funny to think because it will only be his second as head coach of Auburn. That's how you will close out the season. So if I'm Auburn, I'm thinking I need to win two of those final three home games. If you can get all three, that would be an ideal scenario. But you're hoping you get Vandy and Louisiana Monroe, and then again the toss-up against Texas A&M. So Auburn's schedule format, five home games, three road games, three home games, and then one on the road to close out the season. When I look at what should be wins right now, again, this is spring, this could completely change by the fall, I see about six should be wins. And that's good news, because that gets you, if you get six good wins, that means you just need to win a couple of your toss-up games to get you into that, what I think should be fair expectations as of right now for Auburn, which is around that eight-win mark next season. So I think the should-be wins are Alabama A&M, Cal, New Mexico, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, and Louisiana Monroe. I think the swing games, your toss-up games, are Oklahoma, Missouri, Kentucky, and A&M. And then your should-be losses, as much as Auburn fans may hate to hear it, at Alabama, at Georgia. Those are probably your should-be losses there. Those are going to be tough games on the road. So looking at it right now, I think Auburn, honestly, by Auburn standards, it's not an easy schedule by any stretch, but I think it is a more favorable schedule than Auburn has had sometimes in the past. I think eight wins, I think nine wins is manageable looking at it from afar. Again, I would not expect nine wins, but I think eight wins should be a fair expectation for Auburn right now looking at it in April of 2024. We'll see how the roster shakes out after the spring portal. What happens at other universities that Auburn plays will also play a big role when we look back at this again in August and start to look at the season as a whole. Another important note before we wrap up this first segment, Auburn will play these same teams next year. SEC is still not agreed on a long-term schedule format, so they just announced that you'll play the same teams, just flip it. So next year, Auburn will get Alabama and Georgia at home. For instance, they'll have to go to Oklahoma. They'll get Missouri and Kentucky at home. They'll have to go to A&M. So they'll just flip the conference games, but you'll play the same teams. I hate that in the sense that Auburn will go 2 years at least without playing Ole Miss, and without playing Mississippi State. Won't get a chance to play Texas yet. We'll go 2 years without playing LSU. So you lose some of those games that I think Auburn fans have enjoyed, some of those big-time SEC West games that you're missing between the Mississippi schools and LSU in there. But hopefully SEC will be able to figure out a format here soon, whether that's a nine-game schedule, whatever it may be, to where you get more rotation in there and you're getting to play every team in the conference. But that's a way too early look at the 2024 Auburn football schedule. I hope you enjoyed that segment. That's a fun segment to do. Again, it's so hypothetical because you really, again, do not know. Even when you do it in the fall, it's very hypothetical. So many variables that play a role. But it's fun to at least discuss it and talk a little college football here in April. With that being said, we'll go to our first break. When we return, we'll dive into the latest happenings on the Auburn basketball front. Stay tuned to Talking Tunes. A lot happened last week in the world of Auburn basketball, and more is bound to happen this week. I'm not expecting any news, but you never know what could happen. So let's look back, though, first at this past week for Auburn basketball. It started shortly after we got off the air last Monday. The Aiden Holloway did officially enter the transfer portal. Again, not a surprise there. I just want to say this about Aiden. I think Aiden is a fantastic dude. I hate that it didn't work out here for Auburn. I wish him nothing but the best. I hope he finds a ton of success. Not sure what went wrong, why he struggled to shoot like he did, but he still did a lot of things well this past season. His assist-to-turnover ratio was really good. He ran the offense well. I know that he and Trey Donaldson both caught a lot of flack. That's just part of being a point guard. It's like being a quarterback in football. But I appreciate Aiden Holloway. I know Auburn fans were excited about him this year. Didn't go as fans had hoped, and it didn't go as he had hoped, I'm sure. But I think he'll find success. I hate it's not going to be at Auburn, because I do think he's going to find his shooting stroke again, and he's going to be a really good college basketball player. but it just won't be at Auburn. I don't know where he'll end up landing, but I hope he finds success wherever he goes. But he's out, and at that point, that meant Auburn was without a point guard on the roster. However, that would change later in the week. But first, before that, Dylan Cardwell announced he was returning to Auburn. Huge, huge news for the Tigers. This will be Dylan Cardwell's fifth year at Auburn. There's a possibility at one point Auburn is going to lose both centers. There's a possibility they could get them both back now. But at least if Jahni Broome does go on to the NBA, at least Auburn is getting one of their centers back. It was going to be really tough if you lost both. So really, really good news for Auburn on that front, that Dylan Cardwell's coming back. His announcement video was iconic. He recited the creed. Again, just a perfect encapsulation of who Dylan Cardwell is, a true Auburn man. I know Auburn fans were pumped that he's going to be back. He has improved. He improved a lot this past season. Looking forward to seeing his continued improvement and that he's going to spend another year on the plains for Auburn basketball, exercising his COVID year. So looking forward to next season and seeing Dylan Cardwell still in the orange and blue. But I think that might maybe just a little bit got overshadowed by the announcement of J.P. Pegues transferring to Auburn. I mentioned him the last couple weeks on the show as someone that had visited Auburn out of the transfer portal, a 6'2", 185 transfer point guard from Furman. Had a really, really good season last year. 2 years ago, he had a game-winning shot to beat Virginia in the NCAA tournament to knock them out in the first round. So that's already brownie points, if you will, for Auburn fans because of his history there. I think he's going to be a really good player. Again, it's just like high school. Transfer portal is no different. You can't necessarily predict who if a guy's going to pan out or not. I will say Auburn has had a lot of success in hitting in their transfer portal targets, more so than high school as of late. I think Auburn hit on every single guy they got out of the transfer portal last cycle. When you think about Denver Jones, Chad Baker-Mazzara was better than anyone anticipated. I think Chaney Johnson, his development, he didn't look like it hit necessarily right off the bat, but the way he grew and developed throughout the season. Even if you go back to Wendell Green, I think that was a good addition to a couple years ago when Auburn added him. Zepp Jasper is the only one that I can think of that maybe didn't quite live up to the hope because of, at least from the scoring production, he was excellent defensively, but scoring-wise, he didn't quite live up to what Auburn, I think, hoped for out of him, out of the transfer portal. But I think J.P. Pegues, all the signs are there that he will be successful at Auburn, and he will be the starting point guard, barring some unforeseen circumstance next year for Auburn. One of the biggest things that you're looking at when you're bringing in a mid-major transfer, can his game translate to the SEC level? And I think Auburn found that it will. Just listen to the stats here. Got to give credit to Richard Silva of the Montgomery Advertiser for finding these stats on J.P. Pegues because, of course, in conference, you're not playing the highest level of competition. So he went and found J.P. Pegues' stats against Quad 1 and Quad 2 opponents, meaning top teams in the net rankings in college basketball last season. In those games, J.P. Pegues averaged 20.4 points per game, 4.9 assists per game, 3.8 rebounds. He shot 37% from three. Really, really good stats against high-level opponents. I'm sure Auburn knew of those stats, and that was a big deal in their scouting of him to bring him in to be the point guard next season for Auburn. So I think this is a huge addition. Here's part of what Bruce Pearl said about J.P. Pegues. Quote, J.P. is a winner. He is a scoring point guard that has great ability to shoot the basketball. He can score at all three levels, defend, and lead. Talking to several coaches in the SoCon, that's the conference that Furman played in, they unanimously believed he was the best player in their league this season. End of quote there from Bruce Pearl. I think that is a really good compliment from Pearl. I know that Auburn was looking for another guard besides Denver Jones and Chad Baker-Mazzara who could get to the basket and who could go get a bucket. Auburn didn't have that from the point guard position last year. There were things that Aiden Holloway and Trey Donaldson did well, but they both struggled to be able to score at the rim, to be able to create for themselves. if you can put three guys on the court at one time that can all create for themselves, that makes you a lot more lethal offensively. And that adds to an offense that was already really, really good last season. So you think about returning Denver Jones. You think about returning Chad Baker-Mazzara, possibly returning Jani Broome. Yes, you're going to lose Jalen Williams. How does Chaney Johnson step up at the four position offensively? But you add a really good offensive piece with J.P. Pegues. Really, that should elevate you, theoretically, offensively next year from what was already a really high level. So super, super excited to see what J.P. Pegues does at Auburn. So with him returning, what does that leave the roster looking like now? So the assumption is that Denver Jones, Chad Baker-Mazzara already announced he's returning, but Denver Jones, Chaney Johnson will be back. Chris Moore more than likely will exercise his fifth year as well. Then you got Tahad Pettiford, Jakai Howard coming in. Currently, Auburn has two spots open. They got to find a backup point guard, and they've got to find another four guy to compete or back up Chaney Johnson at the four position. It's tough to get guys like that in the portal because guys in the portal are looking for money and they're looking for guaranteed minutes. Just not how Bruce Pearl recruits. And so it's going to be tough to get a guy to come in to be willing to be a backup. Of course, you're selling it in the way that you got a chance to compete, but they won't guarantee time. So it may be a while before Auburn lands a backup point guard or Auburn lands a transfer four as well to come in to compete there with Chaney Johnson. But those are the spots remaining right now. So Auburn's in good position with only two spots. Now, if Jani Broome, we're still waiting for an official announcement from him. If he decides to go on to the NBA, then Auburn has to get a transfer five there to replace him. But, of course, all Auburn fans are hopeful that Jani Broome will return. And if he does, again, that just leaves two spots remaining. So we'll see what news comes out this week. Does Jani Broome make an announcement of some sort? Does Auburn add another transfer? We'll see what happens between now and next Monday, or by the time you're listening to the podcast, maybe something has occurred. Jani Broome has, I think, another 2 weeks before he has to make a decision on the NBA draft. Ideal scenario is he announces fairly soon, one way or the other, so Auburn knows where to go from here in their roster rebuilding. So that concludes our segment on Auburn's roster, but there was something else I wanted to hit on regarding Auburn basketball. I mentioned last week that I thought that Bruce Pearl might be a candidate for the Kentucky head coaching job. Kentucky did not hire him, thankfully. I don't know. Again, I still don't know if Bruce Pearl would have even entertained the offer had it come from Kentucky, but I don't believe it did. Kentucky hired Mark Pope. But that doesn't change my opinion on something, and this is something I've been holding off that I wanted to talk about on the show. I wrote an article, I believe now it was, may have been in February or March 1, and that you can go read on WeagleFM.com. If you go to the sports section, you can find it. But my article was an opinion article that Auburn should name Stephen Pearl head coach in waiting. I had a variety of reasons for that I dove into in the article, but I wanted to hit on kind of a little bit of the details of that. I don't want to go too much into it because, again, you can read the article where I go more in depth, but there are multiple reasons that I thought Auburn should name Stephen Pearl head coach in waiting. And I think when you see these Kentucky jobs and come open and other jobs, Bruce Pearl has stayed. He had the opportunity to go to Louisville. He had the opportunity to go to Maryland. But I think when these positions come open, it just reminds you of how valuable Bruce Pearl is to Auburn. And Stephen Pearl being named head coach in waiting is something Bruce Pearl absolutely wants. And so I think that Auburn should grant that because anything Bruce Pearl wants at this point should be granted, in my opinion, if it's feasible. And I think this is absolutely feasible for Auburn. But it goes past just it being I don't think this is a move that should just be made because Stephen Pearl is Bruce Pearl's son. I think it should also be made because I think it sets up the program for the best chance of success once Bruce Pearl retires. Bruce Pearl, I'm guessing, probably only has about 5 years left before he'll be ready to retire. He's in his mid-60s now. And Stephen Pearl has proven himself as one of, if not the best assistant on Auburn staff. He's worked his way up, starting from a very minor role. And he has worked his way up to being associate head coach. He is the biggest recruiter for transfers. So you think of a guy like J.P. Pegues. Stephen Pearl is the main recruiter for him, was the main recruiter for Denver Jones and Wendell Green, Jani Broom, Walker Kessler, so forth and so on. He's proven his chops there. He's been huge in the game plan. All of Auburn's coaches take a role in game planning. They have different teams throughout the season. But I believe typically Stephen Pearl ends up with some of the bigger games. He ends up having the game plan for those. And I think he does a fantastic job. He was also named the Silver Waves Media Top 50 College Basketball Assistant last season and the year before, I believe. There's also the positive of the continuity of the culture that Bruce Pearl has established. You'd imagine that that would continue if Stephen Pearl took over. That culture would, you wouldn't have to bring it. Someone new wouldn't have to come in and establish a new culture. You could continue the culture that Bruce Pearl has created around Auburn basketball. And I think that would be huge for Auburn in the years to come if that were to occur. There's no doubt that Stephen Pearl is different. He doesn't have the personality that immediately draws you in like Bruce Pearl has. It's hard for anyone to have that that extreme likability, if you will, that Bruce Pearl has. But I will say, I do believe the players are really high on Stephen Pearl. He coaches them hard. But I do think they really like him as a coach. And I think he would do a very good job recruiting like Bruce Pearl has and would continue to coach at a high level. I just don't see the harm in doing this. The University of Houston has done this with their head coach's son, Kelvin Sampson, there. And again, I understand folks like, well, he shouldn't just get the job because he's Bruce Pearl's son. And I get that, but I also really and truly believe that he is deserving of the job because of what all he has accomplished during his time as an assistant under Bruce Pearl. Because a lot of times your best situations are if you're able to promote from within. I think of Michigan in college football being able to promote Sharon Moore when Jim Harbaugh went to the NFL because it allows you some continuity there. And I think that's huge in collegiate athletics. Again, I don't think this is an immediate need that has to be addressed, but I think it's beneficial for multiple ways. And there's a couple things that Bruce Pearl really wants to happen. And I think Stephen being named head coach in waiting is at the top of that list. So I think it would be a smart move by John Cohen to make this happen. Not just out of fear of Bruce Pearl leaving. Again, I don't think that is going to happen. But I think it's best for the program. And I think Bruce should get whatever he wants at this point because of what he's done for Auburn basketball. So I dive into it in more detail in the article that you can read on WeagleFM.com if you have not already done so. Alrighty, with that being said, we'll go to our second break. When we return, we will dive into Auburn baseball. So stay tuned, Talking Tumors. Today, Auburn baseball has hit rock bottom this season. You know, I was covering the series finale on Saturday against Kentucky. Auburn blew a 7-0 lead. Kentucky scored 13 unanswered runs on Auburn after Auburn had the 7-0 lead. Auburn finally got a home run in the top of the ninth. Just brutal, brutal. It was a short press conference for Butch Thompson after the game. I mean, there isn't much to say. It's been the same issues all year. And at this point, there's probably not going to be an answer for it. It's you either have the guys or you don't, and apparently Auburn does not have what it takes on the mound this season to get it done in the SEC, and I hate that. It's disappointing. I know it's disappointing for Butch Thompson. I was really high on this team going into the season, and I thought they had a chance to be a really special team. Unfortunately, it just has not come together. And it starts on the mound. Again, I don't want to take everything away because, again, Auburn only had, I think, 3 hits after the third inning on Saturday, so they got quiet at the plate, too. But a 7-run lead should be plenty of cushion, and it certainly was not. Double that wouldn't have been for Auburn on Saturday in the finale against Kentucky. That's not take away anything from Kentucky because they only have one loss in SEC play. They have been phenomenal this season, so hats off to them. But this is an Auburn show, so we focus on the Tigers. So It wasn't just that Kentucky lost, though. Auburn also lost to Alabama State last week in the midweek. And yes, the midweek game is a game where you rest some guys, where you play some guys you may not necessarily play, but there's still no excuse for losing to Alabama State. And then you go and get swept over the weekend. So Auburn is now 18-17 this season, 2-13 in SEC play. Your postseason hopes are pretty much gone. The only sliver of hope Auburn has is just to go on a run never seen before or to make the SEC tournament and try to win it and get the automatic bid. Those are really Auburn's only two hopes. They're really, really tough. So what do you want to see from this team down the stretch? You want to see them keep battling. That's the biggest thing. There's still a month to go in this season. This Butch Thompson teams are not going to quit. They're not going to quit. They're going to keep battling. They're going to keep fighting. They've got a good group of players, and that's all you can hope for at this point. Keep fighting. Keep trying to find ways to win games, and just try to keep things respectable. See if you can't make a run at least getting a respectable record in SEC play. Make the SEC tournament. See if you can't make some noise there. I think that's just what you've got to hope for if you're an Auburn fan the rest of the way. This season, Butch Thompson, he's a great coach, and Auburn made the College World Series in 2022, they made it in 2019, they went nearly 30 years of not making the College World Series before that 2019 team did. He has done exceptional things at Auburn. I give Butch Thompson a mulligan, being golf terms, this season for how things have gone. I have no doubt that he'll figure out why the pitching has struggled, and he'll make the proper adjustments, whether that's roster, whether that's coaching staff, for next season. But for this year, they just have to keep battling and trying to find ways to scratch and claw to win games. Ike Irish was also banged up in this series. That didn't help matters. He went 0-4 in the opener and then rested all of Saturday's game and most of Sunday's game before pinch hitting. I think his hand was banged up or something of that matter. So as for this week, Auburn baseball will play Georgia Tech in the midweek at home on Tuesday night before traveling to Mississippi State for the weekend series. So Mississippi State, a solid team, shouldn't be as good as Kentucky was. So we'll see if Auburn can maybe get a series win out there. It would certainly help matters for their season and for the fans that had followed. It was a beautiful weekend for baseball. A lot of fans showed up and supported. That'll continue, but it's been a disappointing year, without a doubt, for Auburn. Here's something I wanted to touch on really quickly. So Cam Newton was on the podcast Club Shay Shay this past week, I believe was when it was released. And he had some really, really interesting things to say. He detailed a little bit more of his side of the story of what went down in 2010. So I was only 7 years old in 2010. Of course, I remember the national championship season, but I really wasn't old enough to be able to follow and read the sporting news like I'm able to do today back then. And of course, this was really the height of social media at this point. So the story, I'm sure, will be covered differently in today's era than it was in 2010. But although I was only 7 years old, I do remember when this story broke. I remember where I was when this story broke. I remember listening to Paul Feinbaum, and I remember my parents talking about it. But there's been the documentaries that have been made on this whole scandal and what went down. We know that the NCAA completely, I can't remember the legal term for it, but essentially said that, yeah, we found no proof that Cam Newton took money to play at Auburn. And that is true. That is really a fact at this point. Cam Newton did not take money to play at Auburn despite the allegations. But what was interesting to me was Cam Newton explaining what went down, how this even came to be, how he believes this whole story came to be, how the investigation ended up happening. Was really, really interesting. He went in on Dan Mullen and his wife. That's who he blamed for the story happening. Because you don't remember, his recruitment came down to Mississippi State and Auburn. He had the previous relationship with Dan Mullen because he was at Florida. Dan Mullen was then the head coach at Mississippi State. He explained how on a phone call, when he told Dan Mullen and his wife. He was going to Auburn, not going to Mississippi State. He felt like they may have misconstrued a couple of things he said. That may have led them to believe that he was taking money to go play at Auburn, whereas he said he did not. And he believes that Dan Mullen and Dan Mullen's wife then leaked that to the media that Cam Newton was getting paid to go play at Auburn, and therefore the story began. Then the NCAA opened up the investigation, and Cam Newton had to deal with all that throughout that whole season. Here's a quote from Cam from that podcast, Club Shay Shay, that with Shannon Sharp as the host, that I want to read from Cam Newton that kind of gives you an insight into what he was going through during that season. Quote, when someone would ask, Cam, you all right? Yeah, I'm good. Knowing good and well, I was suffering in silence. Not only am I being investigated throughout the day, I'm trying to play the best form of football that I possibly can during game time. And I can't speak to them. I'm talking to my dad, I'm talking to my brothers, I'm talking to my family, but they don't get it. They're there for support, but it's not like, we understand what you're saying. End of quote there from Cam Newton. If you haven't watched the full interview, or at least this part of the interview where Cam's detailing the 2010 season, I'd highly encourage you to do so, because he said a lot of really interesting and good stuff there. But it reminds you that, you know, Cam was still just a college kid at this point. He was my age. I mean, it wasn't fair what he had to go through. He detailed a lot about how his father was treated. He said his father took the blame because they felt if Cam was going to stay eligible for Auburn during the season, somebody had to admit to it, even though now, according to Cam, no one ever took money, not even his dad, but his dad admitted to it in order to keep Cam eligible, and he talked about the close relationship he has with his dad, and I thought that was really a really, really neat part of it as well. And he explained how he has bitter feelings towards the Heisman Trophy because they didn't let his dad come to that, but he really appreciated what his dad did. But circling back around, you know, to what Cam Newton was going through, he was being investigated, but still practicing and still being the best player on the field week in, week out for Auburn, leading Auburn to a national championship. And it just reminds you that even in this NIL era where players are getting more than they've ever gotten, where they're getting paid, at the end of the day, they're still student athletes. They're still going to class. So just remember that when things are going tough, when you're frustrated and you're not wanting to have any soft feelings for the athletes, for the players, that at the end of the day, they're still young, developing young men that are still trying to figure out who they are. So it's a shame how that whole story played out. And again, even if you don't want to believe everything Cam Newton said, which I do believe everything he said, but even if you didn't take in another side of that, you can still go back to what the NCAA found, and that was that Cam Newton did not take money to play at Auburn. We know that to be true at this point, whether you don't want to believe everything else that was said about the Mullins and whatnot by Cam Newton. But it's a shame that things went down how they did, in my opinion, from the NCAA, that investigation took place, that it nearly put a damper on what was an extremely special season for Auburn and for Auburn fans. So like I said, incredible stuff in that interview from Cam Newton. Great job, Shannon Sharp, for asking those questions and allowing Cam Newton to share his story. And he has talked about it some before, but not in the detail that he was able to go into there. So I highly recommend, I couldn't even get into everything that he said, but I highly recommend you go listen or watch the rest of that. That was just something that I wanted to hit on since I had the time here on today's show. With that, let's go to our final break. When we return, we'll talk about Auburn's move to Nike and what it can mean moving forward. Announced last week that they will be beginning an apparel deal with Nike starting in July of 2025. This was something that many, many Auburn fans were hoping for a long time. The Under Armour deal will expire when this Nike deal picks up. Auburn's been with Under Armour the majority of my lifetime. Before that, they were with Russell. Yeah, Russell's not really much of a brand anymore, but Under Armour, Auburn's been one of Under Armour's biggest brands that they've had. Under Armour has Notre Dame and Wisconsin, but they did not want to lose Auburn. But this Nike deal made a lot more sense for Auburn, I'll explain why, than sticking with Under Armour. First off, Under Armour is a brand that really is struggling right now. It's not near the brand that Nike is. And so Auburn being one of the few top teams that was with Under Armour gave Auburn a little bit of an advantage. They were able to get maybe some more money for the deal from Under Armour. That's why they renewed with them, I believe, in 2015 instead of switching to another brand. But Under Armour's not near as popular as Nike is, especially with athletes. And so that was part of the reason for the move. Another is that it's going to be beneficial in recruiting because of the connection that athletes have with it, because especially in basketball, a lot of recruits, top recruits, sign shoe deals with Nike. Well, when they sign those shoe deals with Nike, that typically means they're going to go to a Nike school. This was something that Bruce Pearl really, really pushed for, more so than football. I think it'll be beneficial in football, but I really, really think it'll be extremely helpful in basketball recruiting. At least that's what Bruce Pearl believes. So we'll see how it impacts that there. Of course, the shoes are extremely popular. No one likes Under Armour shoes and cleats and whatever it might be. So players will like that a lot more. I know there are some issues in the past with just the quality of Under Armour footwear compared to Nike footwear. And so that was a big issue that Under Armour was able to work through. But still, Nike's just a lot better. Now, what I will say Under Armour did a very good job of was I think they did a good job with their fan apparel. I thought they did a pretty good job with their sideline apparel. I thought that looked good. I thought they were unique with that. Nike, one of the things I don't like about that, I don't like a lot of their fan gear that they sell, t-shirts and whatnot, for fans to buy. I also don't love that all their schools are like have the same designs for their Nike, like coaches' polos and things of that matter. That's not my favorite thing in the world. I liked that Under Armour provided, made you look a little bit different. But that's from a fan perspective. I think Nike's going to be much better for the athletes. And that's really what matters the most. It's what's going to be best for the athletes. What do the athletes like best? As long as Nike's giving you a fair deal as far as money goes, and I think that they are, then this was the best move. So I applaud John Cohen for making this move. Another big reason was that some of your most famous athletes have connections to Nike, and they weren't able to wear Auburn gear because of this. Bo Jackson has not been able to wear Auburn apparel because of his connection to Nike. And that just can't happen. You've got to be able to have your... Bo Jackson is one of the most famous, arguably the greatest athlete of all time. Many, many people, Auburn fans not included, know who Bo Jackson is. He is a national name. Maybe not as much as he once was, because it's been a while since the 80s. But he still is very popular, well known. So for him not to be able to wear Auburn gear was extremely... was just not a good look. So it's good that he'll be able to finally don Auburn Nike gear. And also, it leaves open the door for Auburn to be able to possibly make a Bo Jackson type of brand, not to the extent of the Jordan brand that North Carolina is able to do. But if Auburn is able to come out with a Bo Jackson line of clothing or a Bo Jackson, you know, type of shoes or something, I'm sure that's something Auburn hopes that they can work with to do with Nike. Whether that happens as soon as the deal begins next July, or whether that happens down the road at some point over the next, you know, 5 or so years once this Nike deal begins, I don't know. But it at least gives you that opportunity to do something cool like that. And then Charles Barkley also had the connection to Nike. I don't know if he wasn't allowed to wear Nike Under Armour Auburn gear, but I do know his connection is with Nike. You saw him if you watched the video that John Cohen posted when Auburn announced this deal, that Charles Barkley and Bo Jackson were in that clip. Tim Cook, Apple CEO, also played a big role. He's on the Nike board and helping facilitate this deal, I believe. So I think this is very, very positive news for Auburn Athletics moving forward. Nothing against Under Armour. I think Under Armour did a good job, but just they're just not the brand that Nike is. So excited to see this deal when it begins in July of 2025. Remember, Auburn will still wear Under Armour for next year's athletic season for football and for basketball and baseball and all that. But then in 2025, Auburn football will be the first to wear Nike gear, and then that'll go into basketball season and baseball and so forth and so on. So looking forward to that. Alrighty, real quickly, before we get out of here, I did want to touch on Auburn softball. I mentioned a couple weeks back that Mickey Dean had announced his retirement after this season. And since then, maybe that provided a little spark to Auburn softball because they have played well as of late. They got a big-time series win at LSU this weekend, their first SEC series win of the season over number 6 LSU. Shelby Lowe was fantastic in the circle. She's had a battle through injuries in her career. She was a star as a freshman, has dealt with injuries since, but she pitched really well. 11.1 innings, I believe, this weekend, only allowing 3 earned runs. Maddie Pinto was also really good. Auburn won Game 1 and won Game 3. They're big time. They're setting themselves up to put themselves in decent position as of now in a maybe even hosting a regional. We'll see. But just wanted to give a shout-out to Auburn softball as their season continues to progress. That'll wrap us up for today, but next week will be our final show of the semester. Crazy to think that it's winding down, but next week, the last week of classes, and then it'll be final exam week here at Auburn University. So we'll have, I'm sure, plenty to get into. There's going to be a lot of news. By the time you're listening to this show, some guys could be in the portal from Auburn. There could have been a basketball announcement or two on the roster. So we'll have plenty to dive into, I'm sure, roster movement-wise, on next week's show as we finish out year two of Talking Tumors. But thank you all for listening, whether you're listening live or listening on podcast today. Really, really appreciate it. We'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to Talking Tumors. Make sure to tune in again next Monday at 10 for another edition. Also, make sure to check out Weagle's 24-hour live stream on WeagleFM.com. And follow us on social media at Weagle_AU. War Eagle, and see you next time.